Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? Because you can. You can join me. And I hope that this is motivation for you to do that. Come on and get on your feet, or don't get on your feet, or sit on your behind, that's fine too, or sit on your hands or wherever you want to be, or lay on your back if you need to do that, or float in space. Whatever you need to do, you do it.
Anytime.
Okay, I'm just going to put these on and speak into this. Just give me the sign and I'll start talking a bunch of crap about people who thought I was their friend.
Anytime you're ready.
Okay, go.
Anytime.
All right. I'm going to shoot on Sturgill and the RRW and Lou Register for a minute. So Mr. Sturgill had this idea for a feud between me and Lou. At the time, my gimmick was the Great Spinoza, some kind of magician. I'm like, make me the Philosopher Spinoza. It's perfect for professional wrestling, since pro wrestling is the very picture of predeterminism. But no, I'm a friggin' magician. So we have this feud, I'm the heel, Lou's the face, and his gimmick at the time was the stevedore. He was supposed to be this dock worker who, like real loading dock workers, could lift you over their head like a box and then drop you, like the aforementioned box. It was all going to culminate in a big ace show blow-off, and I was supposed to job like usual because I don't have any pride and because Lou was set to become RRW champ. And all I have to do is sell his signature box drop. He lifts me over his head and drops me, and I do a flat back bump, and I sell the broken back thing, right? What could go wrong? So the match goes fine. I'm an experienced carpenter, so I'm out there making him look good by pretending to get thrown around. Then we do the final over-the-head lift, and he chooses that time to suddenly feel a moral obligation to his sacred profession, box lifting, and he thinks, by dropping Butchie, I'm implying that people who work unloading merchandise are clumsy or malicious or otherwise incompetent. So he shoots. He decides not to drop me, but to set me down gently. I lay there, stunned. He holds his arms over his head in a sort of proud victory stance, and I'm just laying there on my back on the canvas, stunned that this imbecile just went off script, and I'm thinking about, how can we work this into the angle? And then I realize that I'm still on my back, and the quick-thinking ref had counted me out. That dum-dum won in spite of himself. That is how predetermined wrestling is.
After that match, I got repackaged. I had been branded as a sort of a hoss, because I'm not super athletic. But on top of that, they decided to add a supernatural component, and I became Papa Wee Wee, a Voodoo Island priest. I was not super enthused with that, but I said I would do it on the condition that I could lead a weekly awareness seminar among all the wrestlers about Afro-Caribbean religious traditions, as well as Eastern, Pacific Island, Indigenous American, and minority Western traditions. So I was supposed to go up against another hoss named Brawl Greens, whose gimmick was he was a drugstore clerk and wore a little vest and a name tag, Brawl Greens. The day of the fight, I had just taken the SAT, drunk, and maybe I was also a little dehydrated, but needless to say, I was not feeling up to it. And then Brawl Greens showed up, and he was much thinner than I remembered, and it turned out he was super duper sick, and he'd lost a lot of weight. So the vest just swam on him, and he looked awful, and he was like, oh, for God's sakes, please, no stiff crap. I'll snap like a pretzel. And I'm like, good God, Brian, do you really want to do this? And he's like, yeah, man, let's go for it. So I decided to use the magic angle, and I just went out there and pretended to turn him into a zombie and make him dance Japanese Buto. It was compelling. He just writhed with intention. And I pretended to exert my mental will. It looks lovely on video. And the crowd are booing. They are totally into it.
When we got the radio wrestling contract, our first thought was, this is so perfect for lazy people. We can just throw a bag of flour onto a piece of plywood and add some oofs and then call it a day. But there's much more to radio wrestling than that. And we soon learned that we need to devote hours every week to this. maybe not on costumes, but on answering questions like, if you can't physically lift someone, how can you lift them up? Where are you headed, Lou?
They have a live radio wrestling recording session on the beach at the pavilion in 30 minutes. I'm headed down to watch it.
Let me grab my shoes. I'll come with you.
I can't wait.
It'll take less than a minute.
That'll slow me down.
Oh, come on.
No. No, and that's my final answer.
Okay, I'm done. Let's go.
I love it when I get my way. Have you seen a radio wrestling match being recorded before?
Before what?
I was told not to be quiet, but they put up a sign that says, be quiet.
You know that radio isn't real.
I'm not going to have that argument. What do you mean by real, right? I took a course called The Ontology of Radio Wrestling, and the professor said, and I quote, if fake means not real, and you don't ultimately know what's real, then how do you know what's fake?
Ooh, why did you do that?
I was recording Foley.
But you actually hit me.
I would have slapped a steak, but you have a beard, and so hitting your face makes such a distinctive sound. Rather than sew some cotton balls on a steak, I thought I'd just slap your actual face to get the Foley of slapping your face.
It's not Foley if you actually do it.
Well then, sound effects, whatever. Now pretend to be mad about something.
I don't have to pretend.
Good, it comes naturally. Oof. Oh, okay, I'm not sure what that was for.
It's a sound effect of me hitting you.
I have to be honest. It didn't sound real. It sounded like hitting a pillow.
How can the real not sound real?
Oh, it happens all the time. Here, let me show you. Ooh, ow.
Okay, that was not an impressive sound vis-a-vis the pain.
Exactly. We have to exaggerate things. Certainly, it's that way with the sound of guns in old movies.
Yes. Now, you mentioned slapping a steak.
I was sort of jesting. I would never use a creature's carcass just for a sound effect. Not when we have the sound effects corpse.
The what?
The sound effects corpse. A member of our team left his body to Foley when he died. And we pull it out of the cooler and slap it and hit it with stuff to get realistic sound effects.
That is horrific.
There's more. We've also trapped that person's soul in a magnetic field, and we're using their memories and thoughts to construct whole shows.
That is amazing and repellent.
That is radio wrestling, my man.
Hello? Hello? Honey, come in.
Wow, this is quite a space.
It's empty now, but imagine it with a ring and seats.
Oh, okay, now it seems too small.
Well, it's all about perspective. Well, we have Lou training here.
Looking good, Lou.
Can't talk. Training. And counting.
We have the whole fight scored like a symphony. Each move is a beat. Each blow a note. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
It's a waltz?
I haven't decided yet. Look, I called you here for a specific reason. I need you to do me a little favor. It seems Lou only gets mad enough to wrestle when he's had too many tasty cakes.
Oh, no, I'm not driving to Philadelphia just to buy tasty cakes.
I'll go with you. I just can't drive because of the sciatica. How are you today, Hearty?
I'm fine, thanks, man.
Do you ever wonder what it's all about?
I'm not joining your cult.
Oh, come on!
No, we've been over this like 1,000 times.
I get points if you join.
No, it's not worth it.
Look, don't you wonder what it's all about?
I do, but...
But why not do something about it? Why not let Hiwi guide you?
I don't need a guide, thanks.
We all need a guide.
No, I'm self-guided.
Yes, but that brochure that you follow, who wrote that? My point is, I get up to 1,000 fresh flesh points for getting you to sign up, and if you pass the test, which is easy.
What's the test?
Sign up and find out.
You're not selling it, Hans.
I know, it's a drag. I wish I wasn't in it myself.
Well, then just leave.
I can't. I founded it.
So, if you leave, everyone else will.
No, it has momentum. They won't sell the mansion, My only hope is to get Tasty Cakes for Lou so he can turn into Lou Blood Sugar, his new gimmick. The B-Show must go on.
Have you ever wondered what it's all about? Well, wonder no longer. Pee-wee is here to wonder with you. Pee-wee is transformative. Pee-wee is transfixative. Pee-wee is impeccable. Pee-wee is a guide to your new eyes in the palace of fresh, clear air. Find what you are looking for and find something new to look for with Pee-wee.
This is the first of three tapes to get you into my philosophy. I am Pee-wee to you, the great Spinoza, and I am the answer to all your questions. You should follow me unconditionally. Follow me and you will be a success. And not some failure, like a stevedore.
What did she say?
Look who's here.
Don't you try nothing.
Look who is here.
Don't you try
it
nothing.
It is Lou Blood Sugar, and he does not like what the great Spinoza is saying in his motivational tape.
How did you get in here?
Turn down for what?
Better not.
Hey, he's turned down a little bit.
Yeah, I can't. Right.
Listen, you, I've had just about enough of you, and I'm about this close to picking you up over my head and then setting you back down again, carefully and conscientiously.
Side one, tape one, day one of my motivational tape project. I am already discouraged. I've already given up. You just began. How can you be discouraged? You just began. I know, right? Isn't that a terrible way to begin? How discouraging. Well, that's a feedback loop. If you just began your motivational tape project, you're already giving up. You're doomed. So just pretend you haven't given up. I'll try again. Side one, tape one, day one of my motivational tape project. Multi-tape, multi-day. I have locked myself in a closet, forcing myself to do this, to get motivated. It's not really a closet. It's more like a hotel room, a luxury hotel room, a 20-star hotel room. 20-star? I thought it only went up to 5. It does. So anything past 5 is meaningless. Not to the hotel. They know they're there. It's that attention to detail that gets them motivated. How many star hotel are you, my friend? How many chambermaids have you within you? And I don't mean literal chambermaids. I mean your chakras that line up in the middle. Where are they? I don't know. I don't know anymore. I got to get a new candle. I had them on a candle and it melted. And that's another thing with the periodic table. I did that. I had it in wax and it melted. Now I got to get a new one. Or I'll make it something out of cereal, some reference book, and I'll make it out of cereal and I'll snack on it. I hate the fact that I don't have control over my urges, and a lot of times I eat important things. Now you can say, oh, I blame you for putting a real estate contract onto a fruit roll-up. But on the other hand, I don't blame you. I don't blame you for eating it, but I blame you for setting yourself up for failure. Hi, friends. This is Hardy White. How many times have we set ourselves up, maybe not for failure, but set ourselves up for a date with failure? So you say, oh, you'd love failure. Go out with failure. Really? Yes. Oh, you guys would hit it off. And it turns out sometimes you do. You go, man, it turns out I am a really comfortable fit with failure. Just feels like an old shoe. We've been in a relationship so long. But don't go out with failure anymore. That first date, they do feel comfortable. So they're just agreeing with me. You need to have your standards set a little higher. It's okay to quiz the person on the other side. I don't mean a person, but the concept or the strategy or the religious belief on the other side of the table from you at the diner or the theme restaurant or the concept. A lot of restaurants now are called concepts. What kind of, they don't say what genre food. They'll say, what's concept food? And you go, eating? I don't know. Sandwich concept. It's a sandwich restaurant. We would say sandwich concept here. That's why it's hard for people to learn our language. You know, we as individuals are like countries, aren't we? In that we have our own language, a language that we speak that we don't necessarily have a course. What's the one that, not Roget's, that's the thesaurus. There's a company that has a lot of language courses. All right, now I'm not remembering them off the top of my head. Also, I don't want to because I don't want to give them extra business. But they don't have, I guarantee, any books available or CDs or anything like that available to you, or CD-ROM interactive available to you to teach you how to speak the language that we each create and of which about ourselves we speak of when we speak of ourselves. We each make a language. We each create a language about ourselves to describe ourselves, I guess is what I'm saying. Much the same way that Land of the Lost commissioned a linguist to make a language for the Bakuni. So I need a sort of Bakuni speak for my new children's TV show. And the linguist says, isn't that going a little overboard? And the executive producer says, well, you know, we were super high when we thought of it, but we want to follow through, see what happens. We like the detail. So they do. And they create this entire language, Omula, Tatakabatiha, Kila Kumfafa, like that. They go, how did you do that? Well, I just combined a lot of languages by people that are, I don't know, that look like golden lion tamarins and how they would speak. We just guessed. And then we just made up funny, silly words and sat around with children. And children did it all, not linguists. Children can do anything that anyone else can do in a university, I think, except for science. But a lot of the executive positions, I think that a child could do that. You think that when you look at abstract art, perhaps. I think about it when I look at university administrators. I think a child could do that. And usually it is somebody with, not a child, but somebody with childlike or childish tendencies, I always think. Oh, my friend, is there something I could do to make my life a little easier to live? Is there some guidebook out there, Hardy? Is there something that I could read? If you had God complete a Mad Lib, would that come close? I don't know. But I want answers, I want them filled in. I want the puzzles all filled in. I want to find that nature, the universe, has completed their crossword puzzle book, and it's already filled in. Well, the answers were always in the back, yes, but now they're filled in. And that means something, too. You all want to know answers. It starts with traveling. You travel and say, I want to know where I'm going. I'm going to this town. It's called Cowboy Town. And I don't even know if it's a real town. It might be some old attraction from the 70s where everybody dresses like cowboys. I do not know. But I think I'll look it up in my guidebook. And everybody wants a guidebook, and but they don't realize that somebody has written the guidebook. You never think about that somebody sat down and wrote that guidebook. Yes, you should go to this town. They have a very interesting historic district. That's a person saying that. There's a different kind of guidebook that is written for each town, and it's secretive, and it's done by a secret spy organization. It's me and my friends, and then we put it out underground to just our friends. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought it up. If it's just for us, right, why even mention it? I just want you to know you're being watched and investigated and evaluated by a secret society. No, that's not true. Oh, my goodness, why are you spreading these things on your motivational tapes? Because anything is possible if you are paranoid, I believe. If you're not, well, everything is still, not everything is possible. That's just not true, is it? Everything is possible if you agree to be deluded or you lower your standards of reason, and then anything is truly possible. But if you have high standards for proof, then everything is not possible. Unless, again, your brain is slightly damaged. And everyone's could be, they say now. If you've ever been hit in the head with an anvil They tell you now, there's a good chance that later on, it could manifest as some sort of brain damage. I did not know that. Untreated syphilis is the same way. Oh, there's all these things that they once thought were good for you, and now, apparently, are bad for you. I'm not resentful. I'm sure they are. And that's good to know, but doesn't it make you a little bit paranoid? You go, oh, I'm not, who knows, I'm not going to the Anvil House of Ill Repute anymore because I don't know what's going to happen to me. First of all, perhaps I'll have some sort of stuttering affliction like I just did. I guess that's because I was lying. People only misspeak if they're telling lies. That's what I heard. I heard it somewhere. No, that's not enough. It is not enough to have once heard something to go and spread it as a lie. You must actually really feel the lie. You must have maybe had a dream about the lie. Then it's all right to go and spread it as if it were some kind of religious revelation and that you want everybody to know and everybody should know. What are you telling me, Hardy? What would you tell me if you had just me and a tape recorder and a motivational tape so you really had to motivate somebody? How should you motivate them? What are you going to say to them? What are you going to tell this other human being who is experiencing life just the way you are, who is perhaps suffering? They could be suffering emotionally or physically in ways that you can't comprehend. And they are reaching out. They are reaching out with some hope, thinking perhaps this that purports to be a motivational tape can help me, can give me some of the answers that I am craving, can lift me up, can be of aid to me. What are you going to say to them, Hardy? Oh, no, I don't know. I'm so sorry. I don't know. Oh, let me think. I can't think of any answers. I understand where you're coming from, though. Oh, my gosh, you're describing a very familiar circumstance. I know that feeling of needing and wanting. And we're all reaching out for answers. And you want somebody to motivate you. Please give me a reason to get up in the morning. I can only give you some reasons that have worked for me sometimes, but I don't know if they're universal. I don't know if they would help you, friend, but I know what you're going through. Oh, my gosh. And I can only say this, that there's been occasions where I'm having a cup of coffee, and I look out the window, and I forget what the window is that I'm looking out, and I forget what town I'm looking out into, and I forget what day it is, and I forget who I am. And I look out, and I just see the sky, and I see shadows, and I smell coffee. And in that moment right there, I think this will do, this would do, this shall do for all eternity. And that's fleeting. Then you hear your name or something. Artie, we're out of toilet paper. Oh, I'm coming, Lou.
Bring me the rental agreement.
All right.
Not the proper part, but the thin part, the copy.
The kind you have to bear down, and then it copies your signature.
Yep, I'm bearing down right now.
I'll bring it to you. Oh, don't struggle. Don't sit there in shame and frustration. I can probably help you. I'll help you. Listen, I'll talk you through it. Are you driving right now? What are we doing? Don't tell me. Don't tell me the situation. I feel like if you told me the problem, I would be inclined to just try to give you an answer for that specific problem. But if you don't tell me the problem, then I might just stumble upon the answer by giving you some very general solution. Do you understand? So if you're really trying to put in, let's say, one of those fans, overhead fans with a light fixture attached that was popular in the 80s, and you don't know which wires to hook up, so I start telling you about how to make a vegan banh mi sandwich. Do you see the overlap?
No.
Where they overlap is poetry.
No.
What is that? No, kitty. That's the negativity, kitty.
No.
Oh, come here and nuzzle with me. It always contradicts what I say. That just goes without saying. Everything you say has a negative. everything that comes out of my mouth has a little photo negative that drops out of my mouth, just like it was a photo booth. But what it drops out is one of those 4 or 5 picture lengths of negative 35 millimeter film that used to come with your developed pictures. They would cut the roll into strips. And then those strips somehow got into my mouth and I'm coughing them up. These negatives of family photos. What are we doing? We're doing it, whatever we're doing it outside in an amber light. And we are made of some sort of blue. Ah, I love it. I love being the photo negative of my memories. I love coughing them up like that. When the Three Stooges would accidentally make a cake out of potholders and then frost that cake, serve that cake, and eat that cake, the inevitable result would be that they would cough up feathers. The feathers would spew out of their mouth. They would choke on them because they were eating these feathers. They thought it was cake. They thought it was cake. They didn't think, the last thing they were thinking is, oh, I'm eating a potholder. They thought it was cake. So when the feathers finally came, they had no explanation. I was eating cake and then I coughed feathers. That's the way it is with our lives. It's because I'm living in this horrible, depressing place. How did this happen? I'm living in an apartment building called Coughing Feathers. And I came to the city to eat cake. And now things are very different than I planned. Could it be that that cake all along was made out of potholders? I hope I'm saying the right word, potholders, right? That means that's that insulated thing. A lot of times they're different shapes, square, round, glove, for taking hot items out of the oven. Oven mitt is another word for the mitt part, pothold. But potholder's correct, right? Because later on I'm going to go, was I saying potholder and I really meant pot sticker or some pot? Is potholder really an hors d'oeuvre that you get at a Chinese restaurant? Or is that pot sticker? Was I saying pot sticker the whole time like an idiot? Was I speaking the wrong language? Was I speaking not even the right version of my own language? How many times have I said a word to you over and over and not really known the meaning, or you have received a meaning I never intended for you to have? That is quite possible. Every time I have called you friend, what did you hear? Every time I have called you enemy, what did you hear? Every time I have called you cousin, what did you hear? Every time I have called you late for supper, what did you hear? You heard me. I know you said don't call you that, Dad. Every time I called you Dad, what did you hear?
I thought you said lad.
Why would I call you lad? Who calls anybody lad nowadays?
Ironically.
Maybe. But not that I know or anything. I'll tell you what, I've been watching some wrestling interviews. I like to watch interviews with people who used to be professional wrestlers who are otherwise retired. And now what they do is they call shoot. They talk frankly about the business and things without all the artificial silliness that goes along with the show part. They just talk about what it was really like. What did so-and-so really have an odor of? You go, well, everybody's sweaty. It was wrestling. I had to ask all the wrong questions. So you were a wrestler. Yeah. So is everybody sweaty, smell terrible? Yeah. All right. Give me a minute. I'm thinking of another question. Some of it was hard sometimes. Yes, it was. Tell a story about how it was hard sometimes. Then hopefully they go off and tell that story. I don't know what questions to ask, you say. How can I interview anybody? You listen to interviews on the radio or on the television or on the satellite, or you listen to interviews on the CB, and you say, how do those people know what questions to ask? Sometimes they're professionals, like Tara Grison or something. Tara Grison knows just exactly what questions to ask of somebody. Or what questions to ask to have that somebody start talking or telling a story. But it's not that easy in real life, is it? Oh, no. Oh, no, I'm coughing. Why am I choking? You say, you don't have to leave it in. I'm real. If I'm trying to motivate you to do something, one of those things should be suppressing a cough to the point where you feel like you're going to have a stroke. I was at the symphony the other day, and I was feeling, no, this is punishment because I was gloating. There was an older lady in front of me, two older ladies, and one older lady, the younger older lady, started having, about to have a coughing fit, and she really, she tried to put a lozenge in and everything, but you could see she was about to have a fit. And she was allowing herself a little bit of a cough when there would be, when it would get a little louder, but it wasn't getting any louder, so she couldn't do it. Then she started really just stifling it by not breathing. Then she did that thing where you're not breathing, you start to sort of shake violently from suppressing a cough. And I was thinking, this lady is going to the mat for us as a classical musical audience. Thank you so much. This is amazing. You're about to kill yourself suppressing a cough so that we can enjoy the classical music without... which mars all live classical music performances. You can hear him. I'd like to hear just silent halls with the cough. Someone's done that. I'm sure someone's done it, and then a DJ's given it away as a premium on WFMU before. This is just coughing, just the coughs from different classical music performances in, let's say, Spivey Hall. Where's Spivey Hall? It's, you know where it is. It's Atlanta. I don't know where things are. I think you do know where things are. Oh, you know more than you know, friends. When I ask groups of people, I'll look out onto audiences. I speak before hundreds, thousands, millions of people daily doing motivational tapes. Say, why in front of so many people? I don't know. They just come out. It's a large closet. And they just turn up. And they say, hey, we are interested in hearing the motivational tape as it's being recorded. So do it in front of an audience of 2 million, 3 million, 8 million, 9, 10 million. I don't even know. I stopped counting at like 10 people. But I know it's many more because I have confidence that why wouldn't millions of people want to know what I'm saying? I know. You don't even know where to start to answer. No, I'm not overconfident. What are you talking about? Is that what you want from me? No, I'm just demonstrating what foolishness sounds like so that you'll recognize it. And if you hear foolishness in others, maybe you'll recognize it in yourself. And then when you go to say things like that, you'll think, no, I remember Hardy saying it and it sounded foolish. That's right, my friends. It is not terrible to not know the answers to things. Never be contented, but never be so unsatisfied that you take any old answer. Oh my gosh. A man was walking with no shoes on. And so he's walking with no shoes on. Next time I saw him, he had razor blades in his feet. I said, what are you doing? He goes, well, they're like shoes. I go, no, they're not at all like shoes. Just hold out. Get something better. Don't do that. They're nothing like shoes. Razor blades aren't shoes. Shoes can be razor blades. No, they can't. I don't. Somehow, you could take the leather from the shoe and use it as a strop for an old-timey razor. Hi, my name's Hardy White. Did you ever find yourself in the wilderness starting a barber shop and you think, how can I make a barber pole out of natural bark, like really bright red bark and white bark? White bark could be birch. And the red bark, I don't know. But how would I find that information? Well, one of your series of tapes or books, if you could buy them, if you could find them, and if you had a tape recorder in the wilderness, then you could listen to me and I could tell you exactly what to do. But you don't have a tape recorder in the wilderness. Your brain is the only tape recorder in the wilderness that you have. The voice in your head is going to guide you. You are going to be that voice coming out of that tape recorder saying, this, my friend, is what you shall do. You shall take a barber pole that you have made out of birch and some kind of redwood, and you shall erect it in front of a tent that you made out of the hides of of animals that volunteered their hides, that signed them over in death and saying, I would like to donate my body to your dwelling. And then you have a sort of barbershop there and fulfill your dream. And all the time, it was the voice in your head, not some tapes that you bought at a store or some chapel. Say, I'm very much enjoying my new religion because they have a gift shop. Do they? You know what else has a gift shop? What? Pancake House? Some pancake houses, some breakfast places have gift shops. And what do they have in them? A lot of times they will have a collection of the syrups that you enjoyed when you dined with them. And the idea is that you come out of that restaurant with memories, fond memories of a variety of syrups. And as you're walking through that gift shop after paying your bill, you see this package and it says, lovely hostess gift, syrup collection. And you think, I want to give that feeling that I had in my heart when I saw the variety of syrups. Syrups. What is it? Syrups. And some of them berry oriented and not even made of a, I don't know, friends. I don't know. Now I'm thinking, don't do that. Because I can get the syrup part, but then the reason I started to snicker is I started to think that they also sell toy trains. What does that have to do with the price of butter? And they don't sell the butter. And the butter was just as big a part of the memory. I want to make memories. I want to go somewhere, and it doesn't have to be a date, but I want to go somewhere where it's not that you paint a plate, but you make a memory. And it doesn't have to be a plate or anything that you make or paint portraits of one another on the date. It's not a date, but you make a memory. And then that memory is somehow encased in something, I don't know, the same type of plastic that they use to encase the corpses that have been flayed and posed and sent to museums in the United States and Europe and supposed to demonstrate the fantastic, awesome mystery of the human body. But really what they are Chinese prisoners dipped in plastic. That's all they are. But that's not all that you are to me, my friend. Oh, no. You know what you are? You're a fellow creature who's feeling things, and as confused as I am, I would never just say, oh, here, just rub butter on it. I don't know. You know what I like to do? I like to go out and scare birds. You go, that's awful. Why would you do that? Because I want them to fear humans. Because I'm worried if I'm going to go out and be nice to them, they'll think all people are kind, and they'll get themselves into some trouble. So I'm willing to sacrifice myself, go out and scare them and say, do not trust human beings. So what I like to do is sometimes come on here and scare you. I don't mean to scare you. I don't want to scare you, but you know what I mean. Don't get too, don't eat out of people's hands, I guess. Wait till they put it down and they're gone and then eat it. I'm teaching them the way of the crow. Crow wouldn't get caught. You know, they would wait. Now, I can wait. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to wait till you're gone. Then I'm going to go eat that thing. I mean, I guess some of them will eat out of your hand, but the way of the crow is cautious. Oh, my friend, I was looking at a tree as I sat on a rock and a crow appeared to me. And he said, what are you doing? And it startled me at first because, you know, people don't talk to each other when they're waiting for stuff like a train or anything. When they do, it might be trouble. I thought maybe he's going to say, do you want to join my cult or something? No, I don't. I thought maybe he's trying to scam me. Excuse me, sir. I'm blah, blah, blah. Give me some spiel. Turns out to be false. And I'm a sucker and I fall for it. And I open my wallet and then my wallet's gone. So that's why I was like, I'm waiting. Because this happened to me with, it wasn't a crow. It was some vultures. Some talking vultures. Turkey vultures or black vultures? What kind of vultures? don't want to say. But the crow swooped down and he looked at me. And he used telepathy, actually. And he said, I want you to write a series of children's books. And I want them to be about different modes of transportation. And some of them you should invent. Don't be content to just talk about planes and trains or even spaceships. I want you to come up with some new ones. I want you to be inventive. And I'm like, whoa, 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 buh, 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 buh. What are you even talking about? And the crow was trying to give me this great answer, and it ultimately turned out to be the answer to every question I had in my life. But I wasn't listening. I was so fixated on the fact that it was a magical crow telling me this that I didn't realize that he was giving me in great detail a plan for my life that would ensure my happiness for years to come. And all I heard was caw, 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 like that. So when I speak to you on this series of tapes that you have purchased from a gift shop at a breakfast place, and you've taken them on your car trip with you, and you pop them into the tape machine, say, I think I'll give them a whirl. Let's hear what these motivational tapes everybody are talking about, what they're all about, that they're talking about them. Many people are that have them, that have purchased them. They're playing them now in their cars or homes or on their home tape decks. Or who knows? And then you hear my words and you hear me say, this is side one, tape one, day one, and I'm discouraged. And you know I'm discouraged too. Hardy knows what he's talking about. He hasn't even started. And he feels like, oh, what am I going to do? I can't even get started with my life. And the days tick by. And it's like, oh, I'm glad it's not a race. Isn't it? I don't think it is. I don't think it's a race. I've talked about how traumatized I am from the Cub Scout Pinewood Derby because of not having anyone to help me with it. How slow my little machine was that was just a block of balsa wood with wheels, uncarved. An uncarved block, woo-way. But you know what? Mine was the slowest car down that ramp that day. I just endured because I wasn't trying to get nowhere fast. And I just endured the least effort, the slowest car, the slowest pace. And my little driver, my little imaginary driver, he was looking around that day, taking in all the sights and sounds of the children gathered around that ramp at the Pinewood Derby, some of them with relatives who are now long gone. Since this memory was old, this is memory, how old is this? Oh, used by, it says used by 1970-something. I just got a whole mouthful of that memory, and it's like, how outdated is it? Ugh. What did I just do? I mean, it doesn't taste bad. Maybe it's still okay. They tell you that sell-by date for memories because they don't want you to be living in the past, and people are like, oh, nostalgia, blah, 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 it'll make you sick. But sometimes it's okay. I've gone back and had things that had said, you know, used by 1968, and I go, I want to have this, whatever it is, Kimba, the white lion. And I'm fine. I've been fine. So I hope you are too. Are you still listening on tape? I hope, you know what? I hope, if you got this on 8-track tape, which I don't even know why they call that, because I don't know how many, it just sounds like two stereo tracks to me. But they say it's 8. I guess 4, I don't know, flips around or something. I don't know. But what the problem I would have sometimes is the tape would flip, and you hear the flip side of it. And it happened with the John and Yoko tape I had one time, and I didn't know it had happened. I thought that's the way it was supposed to sound, and I did for years, thought it was more experimental than it was. Like that. How many times have what you're listening to turned out to be just something that's wrong or defective? You think you're getting a magical message from beyond, and what's happened is the tape has flipped over. You think that you are getting a voice of reason when what you're getting is a voice of madness. You think what you're getting is answers when what you're getting is some absurd message. Some random absurd message from a clown from the other side of the tape. And yet, you may live your whole life. Here's what happens. Sometimes you get too close to the microphone, and the little hairs on my beard will touch the windscreen. And when that happens, I'm afraid that if there's anything living on the windscreen, like tiny animals or anything, they're going to be hurt by that. Because to them, it'd be like logs, like I just dropped all these logs on their world. I don't want to do that. I want to be responsible. And I don't mean responsible like you're responsible for killing all those tiny beings. I don't want that to be me. I want to be someone who reaches out a hand and helps them up. I will help you up, tiny beings. We don't want any help up. We don't want to be up there in the land of the giants. Then what do you want? We want you to just not crush us in the land of the tiny things. You don't have to bring us into your giant world. Just don't come in here and smash our tiny world where we live. Please just let us exist and have our lives. We don't covet your giant things. So just let us have our tiny little world. Let us live in the shadows of the tiny things that have tiny shadows. And we're what we call, tiny world, tiny land, or tiny shadow land, is something else we might say. Some people say that. And you live in giant world. And your giant things will have all the room they need, because you seem to need a lot of room, don't you, my giants? Stomping around with your 7-league boots that can go 7 leagues at a time. And why? So you have all that extra time to wonder, what's a league? Well, you'll know now, because you'll have hours to look it up on the internet, giant, with your giant leaps. I don't need giants. They can have their world. Their chairs are like giant chairs to me. Their buildings like super giant buildings. All their things are too large for me, their panties. Even their dolls' clothing are too large for me. I am the size of what would be an ant to us, or a tiny ant, a sugar, what my grandma calls sugar ants. No, littler than that. So maybe I'm not even on the giant's radar, and why they would have radar for sugar ants, I do not know. But I don't know a lot about giant world. I just make motivational tapes for people like you and like me. Try to keep us going, try to give us a reason to get up every day, to get up in the morning. My reason's you. Make your reason me. All right. Live your life for me. Just if I give you up one day, yes. Then rethink it the next day. But yeah, if you want to just get up today because of me, I'll get up today because of you. Don't have to do that every day. Then we can rotate. Tomorrow I'm going to get up because of Larry Storch or something. I don't know what I'm going to do or who's going to motivate it or what's going to motivate it or what question. My grandmother had a mother, and that's what I'm going to talk about. My great-grandmother, I meant to say, was a very nosy lady. And I swear that she got some extra years just by wondering, is that the daughter-in-law? Like looking out the window like that. And that one question, is that the daughter-in-law? I thought she lived in Baltimore. Enough to keep you going some days. You wake up, and I wonder if that is the daughter. And you go to the window, another day. And then you pray, let me live one more day so I can see if that's the daughter-in-law from Baltimore. Because I think it is. And I think she must be coming and going now, like she has a job. Does she live here? Did they move here? One more day. One more day. And so my great-grandmother got up. My great-grandfather was dead already. My great-grandmother got up and she looked out that window one last time, confirming that it was indeed the daughter-in-law who was now living there across the street, two houses down. She had moved there from Baltimore. with her husband. Why don't we ever see the husband? I don't know. Maybe he works nights. But that was enough. That confirmation was enough. And it completed my great-grandmother's life. And then she lay down and died sometime later. Later than that. But that was connected, I think. I'm not even sure if it happened. It sounds like her, though. It sounds like something that would be responsible for it. It's poetry. You say it's not poetry because it didn't sound nice. No, I mean like I use poetry as an explanation about how things are juxtaposed, how things can overlap, and like a sort of Venn diagram, and how when they overlap, they create sort of the illusion of a third thing. So if I take my cellophane from my cigarette package and I lay it over something that you have, like a photo negative of some event that you experienced as a child, and we put those two things together and hold them up to the light, what do we see? We see a smiling gorilla with a fried egg as an eye. And that's a third thing. And that's the poem. The poem is The Gorilla with the Fried Egg Eye. Once there was a ship, and that ship docked in New York City every 3 months. Timmy didn't know where the ship was when it wasn't docked in New York City, but when it was docked, he noticed that they would take out large crates from the ship and put them onto the loading docks, and then trucks would come and drive the crates away. Some of those crates were marked Danger, Live Animals, and Timmy wondered if there really were live animals in them. He imagined that there were rhinoceroses and zebras and other things. But he was never confirmed in his belief. And then one day, he was on there doing his spy work. What he would do is Timmy would lay across the street, actually across the river, and he would use the scope of his sniper rifle to see what was going on, because he was supposed to keep an eye on that ship, what they were unloading, because there was a specific thing that he was supposed to take out. It wasn't supposed to get into the U.S. Do you hear me? It was never meant to get into the United States. The gorilla with the fried egg eye was never supposed to get off of that ship. Timmy was supposed to take care of it, but he didn't, because he didn't see it. It was marked, it was hiding in plain sight. It was in a crate that said live animals. But because he was across the river, across, he never saw that it was a gorilla with a fried egg eye. And that made all the difference in the world. And that started it all. That third thing, that thing that appeared out of a cigarette wrapper and a cherished family photograph negative. Yeah, oh, nothing will happen when I put those things together, will they, Hardy? Oh, no, no. There's never any consequences for things like that. When you just take random acts and you decide to carefully observe what is created from the juxtaposition of those random acts, no, no, nothing important will ever rise out of that. Nothing will ever rise to the level of poetry. Nothing will ever rise to the level of Godhead. Oh, no, not some simple illusion. Not some hallucination. That could never be the answer to everything. By staring into a pack of camels, I see a face. And you're telling me that's the face of everything? That's the face of creation? Just happenstance. It's just something that some coincidence, right? Isn't that it, Hardy? Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's it. There's no coincidence that we're here together today. You and I. Me speaking. You wondering where you got this tape and can you return it? That's no coincidence. It's happened because we did certain things to set ourselves up. It didn't just happen that you bumped into the sunken gardens or something. You went to Florida on vacation. So, oh, I saw this crazy place that had a Jesus wax museum or something. Well, you went to Florida. So what'd you think? What'd you think was going to happen? You put that tape in the tape deck. What did you think was going to happen? Well, I try to contradict that, whatever that is. If you thought, well, maybe something's going to play. I think it's a tape. It's in my car. What could it possibly be? Mitch Easter? It's a cassette tape. Yes, I know it's probably very old. Who knows what's on it? Probably not some motivational speaker. Was that popular back then when they had cassettes? Who knows? No one knows. That one looks homemade. Was it homemade? Maybe somebody made it for a friend. We used to make audio recordings for friends. I will keep you company on your car trip. I will make you a cassette of just me speaking to you so you'll stay asleep at the, not asleep at the wheel, excuse me, awake at the wheel. Huge difference. Big difference. I want to make a big difference in your life. I don't want to mess it up. Or I want to mess it up. If I have to mess it up, let me mess it up. If messing it up is a bad thing, no. Messing up good thing, yes, then I will do it. So that's all. I just want to be a good friend to you. Oh, my gosh. We're getting to the sort of the end of our time together. So I want you to do a couple things for me. I want you to repeat after me. No, I don't want you to do that. I'm just testing you. Don't do that. I'm not testing. It's not a test at all. I would never do that to you. I would never test you. That's a test. I would never test you. And you should know that. That's a test for me. I'm testing myself, and I've failed, which is great, which is exactly the result I wanted. That's what I wanted. Now, I don't always get what I want. I would love to have more time with you right now. But some things we cannot control. And one of them is the way that time just seems to slip away and that just magically transforms into memories. Maybe it was memories all along. Maybe it was memories all along. Maybe it started as memories. And it's just some sort of illusion that it was once an action, once something experienced, and now a memory. Maybe it was always a memory. If not, though, I'm so glad that you joined me for Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York, and online at WFMU.org. That is worldwide on the International Web Consortium. And so glad that you are with me, and I'm so blessed to call you friend, and all I wanted to do this hour and every hour together is to be a friend to you, to keep you company, and to lift up your heart a little bit, and maybe to give you some encouragement so you can lift up your own heart when I'm not around, and then when I need you to lift up my heart, you can lift up my heart a little bit, unless you're busy or tired. And then we just, whoever can do some heart lifting, we'll do it, and just a sort of very loose heart lifting co-op. That's all I've got going here, and I'm so glad that you joined today to do that little bit of volunteer cleaning work, toilet cleaning work, that is listening to Miracle Nutrition. It's just like cleaning the toilet at the co-op once a month. That's it. And just do it, except it's every week. That's it. That's all you have to do. And it's nothing. And then we get to be together. Oh, my friends, so good to be together like this. I hope that we'll be back together again next week and the week after that. And I'll keep you informed about all the weeks after that, and I'll tell you about the shows. No, that's the wrong show. Let's see. What is the theme? What is it?